really comes out on a tape. Yeah.
Well, I will talk to you. I'm interested about like your professional career, but I know that yesterday when we had to finish up and you had to come back and teach, we started talking about you know, your marriage to Karen. And I was just interested because I think I told you with my sister-in-law, there's a lot of terminology that we use that when I could ask her about it, as someone that doesn't know anything about martial arts, but speaks Tagalog and Visayan, I think those are probably the only two, maybe more. She could give some meaning and context to what some of the terms mean. And you were talking about some of that too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the interesting thing with Guru System, having, what, 36 different instructors, is there is some terminology. And the nice thing, like I said, with Karen being Tagalog and Visayan fluent, Guru has really kind of adopted her as sort of like his language coach. And he does come up with some terms, and he's asking, is this Tagalog or Visayan? And she's like, it's not either one. And so she'll get on Facebook and get a hold of some of her friends who know some of the different languages and dialects of the Philippines and ask around. So there definitely is some words. Like there's words that Guru uses that comes from his father's dialect, which I believe he calls Ikakano, not Ilocano, but Ikakano.
Oh, interesting.
And so it's very, very interesting in that way. I'm sorry, what was the question? I kind of drifted off.
No, it's okay.
There.
I think the other thing too is there's a lot of, you know, Guru learned from a lot of guys that have been training in this for a long time, and so they may have been using terminology that's not no longer
sure.
in use.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, in English, you know, you use the word like, was it, that cat is groovy or something.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, somebody says that and you look at them and go, geez, welcome, you know, welcome to 2018 from the 60s, you know?
That's true, and there's stuff that, let's see, I'm trying to think of like, whatever. People used to say, like, that's gnarly. I don't know if people even say that now, but, like...
Old farts like us do.
Yeah. If you were... And you do, but if you were using that with, like, a group of young kids or teaching, you know, young kids or teenagers, they might not even have any idea.
Oh, they'd look at you. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'd look at somebody... If somebody had said that, I'm like, oh, you're an old skateboarder. Nice.
Yeah.
In my era.
Yeah. Well, what's it been like? Because I know that... and it's awesome to see, and, you know, I think all of us appreciate the work that Karen puts in here to help out at the academy. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, so what's that been like to be both of you having, you know, Guru and the academy and the organization as such a part of your life and your marriage?
It's really kind of been a great thing. And for me, when Karen first came here, it was actually the first place I really brought her. I mean, after settling in, obviously, but, you know, we went to lunch with some friends when I got her at the airport.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was literally she came home, she took a shower, did whatever, and I literally brought her down here, I think, before she even went to bed the first night of coming here, because I knew the fact that there's so much Filipino culture and, you know, it's such a family down here that it was going to be something that I thought that she would at least feel somewhat comfortable and get a little taste of home kind of thing. And fortunately, you know, everyone took to her quite quickly because of the personality she is, which is a lot, you know, kind of crazy and goofy like me. So they thought, oh, okay, you know, she's this wonderful person and very nice. And she's always kind of jumped in and helped out here, and now she's working at the academy.
Yeah.
So it's been great, and I know it's been a big help to Guru, and that's what really means the most.
Yeah.
You know, that it's something that, you know, he's been learning a lot from himself. You know, he knows terms, and he knew them as they were taught to him and what it applied to martial art or the movement. But then Karen could explain, well, in the language, you know, this is how it's kind of used, and it was also helping Guru sort out what was Tagalog, what was Visayan, where he knew words and he knew the meaning, but he wasn't sure which language it was.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Karen's been very great with that. And it's fascinating to me, too, because I can say before I got involved in FMA, I didn't know much about the Philippines other than, you know, some basic history when it came to, like, U.S. involvement there. But I didn't know much about how rich the culture was, how many influences, all that kind of stuff. And it's just, it's almost... Philippines seems like more American than America when you're talking about mixture and a blending of cultures and stuff. So that's become something that I never thought I would know much about, and now know quite a bit about. And you know, the nice thing is Karen will train because she's embarrassed that me, the white guy, knows more about Filipino history and culture than she does as a Filipina. But in that respect, in the respect of the martial art, I don't know as much about the contemporary culture as she does. Yeah. But you know, so she's just like, oh my God, I can't have that. So she comes down and trains. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And I think the other thing too is that I'm sure you've seen, like I have, tons of guys like this where martial art is something that's such an important and big part of their life.
Oh, yeah.
But then it's disconnected from their family or their spouse.
Yeah, yeah.
And with you guys, it's really something that, you know, is integrated in. So yeah. I think it's awesome.
Well, and it's something that, you know, I think Guru jokes about people saying, you know, by the time they got their higher level instructorship with him, they're on their second or third wife or something like that. And really, it is. It's something that I think for a martial art person, it is a part of your life. And for me, it's been part of my life for 35 years now. Yeah. So it's really, it's not going away. It's not something I can stop. And when I can't train, I do get a little bit irritable. And Karen just kicks me down here to the academy. Okay, go, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's not open. She goes, I don't care. Go down and sit in front of it because you'll feel better. So, you know, I think it's important. And a couple usually either has to, the other person, if they're not involved in the martial art, has to have something else that they're really into that takes as much time.
Yeah.
And they're fine. And I know some couples like that. Or they do have to be really involved together. And you see some amazing couples like that here, like Guru Daniel Linero and Guru Marie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's a Filipina too. So it's this sort of very interesting thing. And you know, and for them, it works because they're both heavily involved. Or someone like Guru John Spizzano and Guru Suzanne, mm-hmm. you know, they're a fantastic couple that, you know, trains together and you know, martial arts are a huge part of their life. And you know, that model works quite well as well.
Yeah. I also appreciate the fact that you've really taken such like a stewardship role, not just a steward, but like an active role in, you know, teaching classes and helping the academy. And I don't remember if we actually talked about this and recorded it yesterday, but you know, we're definitely at a season of our life where we have an opportunity to help carry on some of the traditions, and we're not just. It is nice in some ways when I can attend an instructor camp or attend a seminar and just be a student.
Yeah.
But I think it's a great privilege to feel like in however ways we could, in some ways to help, you know, support Guru, like what you were saying.
Oh, yeah.
Or help the academy or the organization. And I think that's why in some ways I have so much respect for everyone that's constantly here, especially someone like Simo Cookie, who really, you know, goes so far to help Guru and
all above things. And beyond doesn't quite do it justice.
But I think that's another thing in martial arts these days where I think maybe, and I didn't experience this myself, but maybe like in the old days, you know, when you had the black belts or instructors that were there for a long time, and then you had the most senior, you know, master and instructor that kind of got older, and they really did take care of the school, and they really did take care of like the head instructor or the master.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And these days, or maybe in contemporary culture, everyone's really just in it for themselves. Whether, you know, UFC is very popular, but no one's thinking about like, well, who's
what comes
whatever
next?
Happened to those original UFC fighters, and what about those old trainers? And you know, I think there is a side of martial art, like traditional martial art, that does have the respect piece and the tradition piece.
Yes.
That I think that's nice because it still exists here in the academy in certain kind of ways.
Right. Fortunately, I think, you know, the Asian cultures, that's one of the hang-ons that they still have, where Western culture had it and then kind of lost it, this reverence for lineage and what's come before. I mean, not that lineage is like, oh, here's my lineage, respect
me
kind of thing, but you know what I mean. It's an important thing, what came before, who helped bring you these things. And, you know, we're realistically in a very, I think, the most exciting time in martial arts in history, because we don't have to learn it to go get water. I can go to the store and get water, and I don't have to worry about dying on my way. You know, there's not going to be animals attacking me. There's not going to be people attacking me for my water.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't really have to practice it for life and death any longer.
Yeah.
And it's not so clannish. It's open.
Yeah.
You know, you can train with a lot of different people now, and no one's worried about showing their secrets because they're worried you're going to come back and kill them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an exciting time, and so it's kind of sad to not see knowledge of what came before and respecting a lineage. Because I think it's even more important now that we're really mixing a lot of things to understand your elements and where these things are coming, and especially when it wasn't so easy and how much footwork like someone like Guru Nanak did. I mean, he's so revolutionary considering he was training with people who were rivals, and it's just not something people could have done during his day. And a lot of credit, you know, as he gives to his father for that, being able to open those doors. But he also has an amazing reputation. And for instance, when I went to see Karen in the Philippines for the first time, we went to Cebu for some training for her job. And so I decided, well, I need to look up, you know, Dasa Perry's headquarters here. This is very, you know, historic place. Looked it up, said, I'm going to go visit. So I walk in the door, and sort of a secretary lady meets me, and she asks, you know, can I help you? And I said, I told her my name, said I'm a student at the Inosanto Academy, and I was here visiting. And she goes, oh, you've got to meet Grandmaster Joni. He'd be happy to see you. Sure enough, she takes me upstairs. Grandmaster Joni gives me a big hug. I've never met the man before.
Yeah.
And we sit and talk and chat, and there's another young man by the name of Kenyette as well, so he's probably a cousin or nephew or something, and he runs the LA chapter.
Okay.
And he was there. It was like their last day, him and another gentleman. And they were very friendly, and it's just like, you know, Guru Nanak opens the door.
Oh, yeah.
And so same thing. I looked up somebody on the island of Bohol. I was just trying to find FMA people there, you know, take a few lessons. There was a young man, probably in his 30s, certified in modern arnés. Uh-huh. And I got a hold of him on Facebook, said I was going to be there. He's like, great, please come down. Probably took 2-3 lessons with him. We just would not take money from me.
Yeah.
Brought his students in. He probably had a good dozen students. They were all real friendly and happy to, you know, work with me. And then Master Virgil Cavada was going to be in Cebu toward the end of my trip, and he said, please come back over, because I spent most of the time in Bohol. And so we came back over there. He took me to meet Grandmaster Kakoy, who invited me into his living room and sat and told me jokes for, you know, half hour, and talked to me for another, you know, hour and a half or so. Just sweet man. Just like, oh, you're a student of Denny. And it just, you know, it was just fantastic. And then we ended up going and having lunch with Grandmaster Moni Velez, Grandmaster Nick Elazar, and Grandmaster Rodrigo Moranga. So these are all, you know, Blintawak guys, and they're all kind of, I wouldn't say rival factions, but they're different factions. And Master V was talking to him, and it sounded like he knew him for a long time. And so after we left, you know, these guys are very nice, are calling me maestro, and I'm like, no, sir, no, I'm not that. I'm just a student, you know. And they were amazing. I keep up with these guys on Facebook, and Grandmaster Velez was teaching me like some Chinese healing, and was teaching Karen, you know, and just really, really great people. And so when we left, I asked Master V, I said, so how long have you known these guys? He goes, well, I know of them. He said, I met Grandmaster Nick before, but he said, I haven't met the other two until today. I said, really? I said, well, aren't they kind of rivals? He said, yes. Well, how'd you get them to come out? It was because they came out to see you. I'm like, me? I'm not anybody.
Yeah.
He said, but you're a dance student. So that's, you know, the kind of doors. And, you know, we need to learn to appreciate these, you know, all this footwork that's been done before us by people like Guru Dan and all the different masters. You know, they've gone through the hard times and done all the hard work so we can have really a very amazing and relatively easy compared to what it was in the past time with learning all kinds of things. Everything's at our fingertips.
Yeah, that's true. One of my favorite stories that Guru told us was he had heard that there was a Filipino man teaching some sort of Filipino martial art here in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember exactly where, but from what I remember thinking, it was like not the greatest place. I don't know if it was Compton or Watts, but it was maybe somewhere in South Central. And he was talking about how he literally was going block by block and asking people, is there a Filipino man that lives around here?
Mm-hmm.
And he happened to be in a pretty, he happened to have like a pretty good start. So he didn't spend hours and hours and hours, but he spent quite a while asking people, literally, like, do you know of a Filipino man that lives here? And he finally tracked this guy down. And, man, that is incredible dedication.
It's dedication, no doubt.
I think the other thing, too, is, and lots of people say it, I'm certainly not the only one, but, like, you know, he's been able to create excellent relationships and alliances between people that sometimes can be very, you know, they may have their challenges or or disagreements with other groups, but with Guru, they're very open to him, and I think we benefit greatly from that affiliation.
Oh, big time. Yeah, I think it's, you know, if you really stop and think about it and do a little homework, or, you know, in your homework it could just be just stop and listen, and you'll figure that out quite quickly.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you kind of listen, especially outside of our circle, outside of the Inosanto family. You kind of listen to some of these rivalries, you know, and you're just like, wow, you know, this group and this group really hate each other, yet we can have an affiliation with both, and it's not held against us in any way, and we're treated, you know, very well by both groups.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that in itself is you know, miracle level stuff, you know.
Speaking about, like, other groups, I know that you sometimes will be with Guru when he does his training, in Cambodian boxing.
Oh, yeah.
So, what is that? That must be... I think that's an opportunity and a privilege that not many of us... I've never had to be able to see Guru in times where he's, like, learning. I have seen him when he's brought other instructors. In fact, a few years ago, he brought Grandmaster Estalia here. And I remember looking over in the middle of when Grandmaster was talking. I looked over at Guru's face, and it, you know what, Tim? It was just joy. Like,
oh, yeah.
You could see, it was probably the same look that I have when Guru's teaching.
Like, oh, of course.
You could just tell, like, man, he is enjoying this every ounce as anybody else. And it must be nice to be able to see that with him
in
these different areas.
I would say the very first time I saw something like that, that it really sunk in, was probably, I think it was right after I got back from Kazakhstan. So it was probably around 2012. And it was Sifu Francis had come in to do one of his twice a year Wing Chun seminars we did here. And he was going over just some basics with the Pak Sao, just a simple Pak Sao to a Sat Sao. Guru saw something in there that was brand new, went over, asked Sifu Francis the question, got the answer, lit up. And I'm like, this man's had 10 or 11 Wing Chun instructors, including Bruce Lee, has done more Pak Sao's than probably breaths I've taken you know, in my lifetime. And he found something new in the basic. And so it's just, that was the biggest lesson. I'm like, always find new in the old. You're not done learning. You're not done refining anything that, you know, you think you have. So, you know, that kind of really started really watching how he learns. And with the Cambodian thing, that's really special in that, first of all, with the history of Cambodia and the Khmer Rouge killing most of these people, if you find an authentic Cambodian martial artist, especially an older one, you found a treasure, and go study with them. Go learn what they have, because this is rare stuff. And, you know, Guru's been really happy with learning it and trying to help Master Amri Bon, who's the Pradal Sari guy we study with, former champion, kind of like the Muhammad Ali of Cambodian kickboxing in the 60s and early 70s. And so I've kind of taken it upon myself to help them promote their art.
Yeah.
So I've been really trying to help work with them, organizing an organization and where they could maybe make instructors and do things like that, because I see it's important to Guru. It's certainly important to Master Amri, because he's just an amazing person, a survivor of the killing fields, and just a very nice man, and it's important to him, and therefore it's important to me, because, you know, I very much admire these men. And, you know, they've been so giving to me that, you know, it's, how could I not?
Yeah.
And it's really amazing to watch him and Guru train together, because they just have fun. They have this great fun. They move around, and Master Amri's teaching Guru stuff, and Guru's asking questions and showing him some things, and they laugh and they giggle like they're 12 years old. Like, you hear, you know, really happy children playing. That's what they're like.
Yeah.
And it's just magic.
Well, I think the other thing is, I remember there was one time Guru showed us like a little bit of a, he was really watching it. Well, the amazing thing is he was watching it to evaluate himself, you know, so he wanted to watch his form and stuff like that. And he also wanted to show us, you know, whatever it is that they were doing some pad work. And what was amazing to me was the fact that, you know, Master Amri seems to be younger than Guru, but you know, given Guru's
maybe about
age,
10 years, I think. Yeah, Master Amri's about 72.
Oh, he looked younger than that. Guru looks younger than that.
Yeah,
too,
exactly.
You know? But given Guru's like age and reputation and name, he did he didn't seem like he was going soft on Guru. He was really running him through training just like everyone else, and I think that speaks to, I think, the respect that he seemed like he had for Guru, because it was like, well, just because you're Guru Nisanto, just because you're, you know, up in age, doesn't matter.
Right.
You're still going to get this training. And Guru wasn't trying to, I mean, he was going through it too. When he was watching it, and to us, he was commenting on, you know, like, I need to work on my cardio or do this. And but it was great. It was just, it's a great model, I think, of how to learn, how to be like, how to be a student, and how to maintain that passion.
The humbling aspect of it, the just really putting any ego aside.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredible. You know, he has no problem putting on a white belt, you know.
Yeah.
To learn something new. And, you know, I've seen him, you know, study different Balintawak systems. I've been with him to study Sistema with Martin Wheeler.
Yeah.
I've been with him to study the Cambodian boxing. And, yeah, just puts on the white belt, clears his mind. And, I mean, and he'll ask questions, too, that I'm just, he's like, well, how do you, you know, what's the way to defend against this? And at first, I'm thinking, well, he knows a million ways. And I'm like, wait a minute. No, he's asking how this person does it. He's not concerned about what he already knows.
Yeah.
He wants to look at how this art or this person defends it. And then what's interesting is he'll start, say, from the art in broad, like Pradalsari, for instance. Yeah. And then he found out that there was another guy in there that was sort of from another instructor. But when he came to America, he got attached to Kruama, and his name was Ratana, Master Ratana. And so he'd start training with Master Ratana as well, because Master Ratana's style was a little bit different than Master Omri. So he wanted to see, okay, what are the differences in how different trainers even work this art? So he worked with not only Master Omri, but, you know, Master Omri was having, say, some gout issues or whatever and couldn't hold. So Master Omri would call his champions in, guys that had been champions under him in. And so Guru got a chance to work with about four or five guys that had won championship fights with Master Omri coaching them, and these guys were all really amazing guys, and they all worked with Guru and were really happy to do it, and they're pretty amazing guys. One guy had such a good, like, fight face, very humble, very nice man, and Guru's like, Timmy, you gotta let him hold for, you know, kicking and stuff. And the guy's like, okay, he comes and kicks, and he puts this look on his face. I'm like, I don't want to. This guy's going to knock me out with a bat or something. It's like, I want that fight face, whatever that is. Yeah. That guy, need to get that look.
Yeah. Well, you know, in addition to all of the new stuff that you do with Guru, one thing I'm curious to get some perspective on is, I know that you teach JKD here at the Academy. Uh-huh. What is that experience like to be, you know, to be at the Academy that has become so renowned for propagating Sigong Lee's
I almost don't
art.
Like to think about it, because it makes you freak out.
Yeah.
You know? It was not only that I taught JKD here, but I had to take over a class that Sifu Yori was teaching.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, wow, okay, big shoes or bigger shoes with big shoes, and then you got to step into that.
Yeah.
So it's Guru Dan's Academy, Sifu Yori's class, and now, hey, Tim, go teach that. Like, okay. It is, could I say I ever thought I'd be doing that? No. That is something that just blows me away every time I think about it, that I am now teaching JKD here at the Mecca, and having followed some pretty amazing instructors in the class. And the classes that I've actually taken over were classes that were, when I came here, taught by some really amazing people.
Yeah.
And so to think that I'm filling those shoes, I hope I'm doing it justice. So it's humbling, because, you know, you really do feel I got to be on the top of my game. I'm teaching the JKD 1 course, so that means I have to make sure that people are well prepared to move on to 2 and then to 3. And level 3 is the one the Guru teaches. And now, so it's like, you don't want someone stepping into 3 not knowing what they're doing. So you really do, you know, you check and recheck your own stuff, your own knowledge, and, you know, and I follow and I watch Guru, and I make sure, you know, the camps are very important for that, the classes are very important, so I can see what he's looking to do with people, and then I can tailor, you know, because there's a particular Jun Fan curriculum, but even that, you know, is very flexible, and so I try to make sure that everyone has the fundamentals, especially in level 1. But my level 1 course always ends up being quite mixed, because
one thing that can be said that's really great about this academy and the people that are here now, even if they're level three, they still go to two and they still go to one.
Yeah.
So they train in all the classes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we have more level one courses than we do three. Three's only one time a week. Two's only one time a week.
Yeah.
So to get their reps, they'll go to the other classes, which has been fantastic, because if you're brand new in there, you're going to have five, six guys in class, or girls, who know what they're doing, and they're going to help you out. And so the fun thing is tailoring a class that, if I've got some people that are newer, giving a drill that they can do on the surface as shown. And the other guys can then start nitpicking and getting, you know, a bit more, should we say, detailed with what they're doing, or play with it a little bit. And I've gotten a lot of good feedback from both the more beginning people and the advanced guys who are saying, look, we really like the class. We really like what you're doing. So, you know, that makes me really happy.
But, well, you know, for someone like you that's been training for a long time, obviously you're a student of Guru Dan, you're a student of Sifu Larry, but I think more than that, you know, like the spirit and respect that you have for the organization, everyone that we work with, I mean, I think it's very fitting and very appropriate that you would have that sentiment that you would have never thought that you'd be the one to do this. Because I'm sure there's a lot, and I know there's a lot of guys out there that think that they would like to do it, or think that they should be the one, or whatever it is that they're doing. And but with the tone that Guru has set with this academy, the people that go here, that contribute to the organization, I'm very happy that you're, you know, taking the reins in that respect.
Oh, yeah. Well, it really comes down to trust, because, you know, teaching wasn't something I ever thought of doing on this level. I thought, oh, yeah, you know, maybe I'll have a kid or I know somebody and I'm going to teach them a little bit of what I know, because, you know, I've been in martial art 36 years now. And I thought, yeah, of course I would teach someone individually who I know, but I never thought, oh, I'm going to be teaching a class or even get that rank. I was just always training because I liked to train. No problem sharing it, just never thought. And then after I was training with Sifu in his Sifu Larry in his private groups, I remember one day he comes up and he goes, oh, and you're an apprentice instructor now. I'm like, I am. Oh, okay.
Awesome.
You know, I'm like, awesome, great, okay. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And then it was funny, I actually started getting asked to sub classes here before I was actually an instructor. I'm like, I'd love to. I said, but I'm not an instructor. And said, you're not? Oh, well, let's fix that. And so, boom,
that's great.
Done. Yeah. And it was actually something too that Sifu Larry had kind of asked Chris Harley and I, sort of on his deathbed, almost literally, saying, "You guys," he kind of gave us these promotions at the end, and he said, "Not so much for what you know now, but for what you will know. No pressure."
Yeah.
So I feel, you know, I've dedicated my life to living up to the promotion that he gave me at that point.
What a huge blessing.
Yes. And then he said, the other thing I'd like you to do is please seek out instructorship under Guru Dan. Okay. So we let some time go by, because it's, you know, a very emotional thing, especially for Guru with people close to him. And so after some time went by, Chris and I approached Guru Dan and said, you know, Sifu Larry asked us, and one of his last wishes for us was to pursue instructorship under you. And he got this big smile look on his face. He goes, that would be great. He goes, I'm really interested in making instructors, because they give back. And that's meant a lot to me too. That always sunk in.
Yeah.
Give back. Pay it forward.
Yeah.
And so, and then we wrote our letters, put in our paperwork, and we just forgot about it. You know, it's just like, you don't worry about things like that.
Sure.
You trust.
Yeah. Yeah.
You trust. And then it was, you know, it was funny, about a year later, and it was kind of funny, in that time period is when I kept getting asked, and I'm like, oh, I'm not an instructor yet. I said, I'm under Larry, but not under Guru. And I said, really? What's that? You know? So, so it was pretty, pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And then got an instructorship, and then I started subbing for classes, and then some classes became open because schedules of instructors or health of instructors changed, and now I've got three that I teach regularly here.
Awesome.
And I sub for quite a bit, and I've subbed for Guru Dan before. That's a really nerve-wracking situation when you're asked to, you know, sub for the big show.
Yeah.
And, you know, and people have been amazingly supportive, and it's been a great thing.
Well, I want to thank you, Tim, for, you know, taking the time.
Sure.
It'll be interesting to listen to this. I'll probably just put them together.
Yeah.
But, you know, the tone and the feel of both.
I'd like to join the party.
Sure, no problem. But, No, thanks, Tim.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks for everything you do.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. For a podcast.
Yeah. Oh, that- now-